This next kina that we'll say is kina chaf gimel, kina 23. It's on page 438 in the Koran, page 260 in the Art Scroll. In this kina, we do something quite different from what we've been doing up until now, and even most of the kinos that we'll be saying for the rest of the day. We transition from the communal to the personal tragedy. It's often easy to lose the individual amidst the millennia and the millions of tragedies. The loss of the Holocaust, for example, is perhaps more accurately captured, not in just the number, the sheer number, but in every single Shema Yisrael that was cried out. And we can never lose sight of that. And because of that, we turn in this kina to the tragic story of the son and daughter of Rav Yishmael Kohen Gadol. The story is that Rav Yishmael, Rav Yishmael ben Elisha, he had a son and a daughter. Apparently they were both very handsome, very beautiful, very striking. And after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they were taken into captivity, sold as slaves to two different Roman noblemen. And at one point, the two Roman noblemen were talking, schmoozing together, and they both commented, "I bought a very handsome slave, I bought a very beautiful slave woman," and they both had this idea, let's get them together, let's have them mate, and we'll have beautiful children that we'll be able to share in the profits. And that's what they did. They locked them in the room together, and they expected that they would, in the future, have children, very strong, very handsome, very profitable children that they could take advantage of. And the kina goes into detail about the internal monologue of each of the two children, how they were terrified and refusing to go along with what they had been ordered to do. Both the son and the daughter would say to themselves, "How could I turn back on the heritage and the values and the station of my family, of being Kohanim, of being priests, of being a member of the Jewish people, a representative to God of the Jewish people? How could I turn my back on all of that and sully myself by being together in such a disgraceful fashion with somebody?" The room was dark, it was night, and as the sun rises, a little bit of light filters in. They see who each other are, they embrace, and they cry so much out of the heartbreak of the situation that they found themselves in, that the Jewish people found themselves in, that they died out of sheer exhaustion, out of sheer heartbreak. The Medrash in Eicha Rabbah, it actually adds a little bit of detail, that apparently a number of years had passed by, and they didn't recognize each other. And they have this conversation where they said, "Hey, listen, I was from the upper neighborhood of Yerushalayim." And then the girl says, "Yeah, I was too." And one of them says, "I had a brother." And the other one says, "I had a sister." And you can sort of see their minds working. Maybe this is my sibling. Maybe it's not. How do I know? And they both gravitate towards one memory that They used to say goodbye to each other before they would leave the house, before they would go to learn Torah. And that memory, they both spontaneously said, and that's how they knew that it was each other. And that was the moment that they realized that they had found each other. It's an extremely powerful story. It's an extremely tragic story. And I'd like to frame it with something that Professor Yaffa Eliach wrote in the introduction to her book, Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. In the introduction, she analyzes and compares a very striking difference, or what she perceives to be a very striking difference, between Jewish and Western Christian folktales. She writes, "During the Holocaust, European Jews were systematically destroyed, and the cultural achievements of Western civilization were fragmented,
Hasidism continued to create its magnificent tales in ghettos, hiding places, and camps. Despite the unprecedented scope of mechanized destruction of human lives, Hasidim did not lose its values, its belief in humanity. In fact, it seems that the very nature of the Hasidic tale made it a most appropriate literary form through which to come to terms with the Holocaust and its aftermath. The overwhelming number of dead and the anonymity of the victims, the scope of the destruction seems to leave other genres of the literary tradition of Europe at a loss for words. And she goes on to quote a number of contemporary people that had lived through the Holocaust or lived around the Holocaust time that were not Jewish, Polish writers, other European writers, of elements of the European population that were also systematically persecuted by the Nazis. And yet all of these people could not muster up the energy and the insight to produce meaningful works of literature, and they wrote that. Apparently the Polish poet Thaddeus Roswitz, he said, out of a remnant of words, out of salvage words, out of uninteresting words, words from the great rubbish dump of the great cemetery, that's what he used to write. The British critic, Stephen Spender, has suggested that this inability of Western literature to cope with the Holocaust stems from the traditional preoccupation of Greek and Christian literature with the fate of the solitary sacrificial victim, Oedipus, the Christian savior, or Lear, and that such a literature is inevitably ill-equipped to confront a disaster that affected millions of people, to create literary tragedy from that disaster. And she contrasts that with the works of the Nevi'im, of the prophets, that deal with national destruction. And because of that, Professor Eliach posits that Jewish literature is uniquely equipped to process and experience and translate sorrow into literature. But what's ironic, and I think it's intentional, is that this entire book, though, is not about national destruction. It's about individuals, of an individual man, woman, child, teacher, not stories of masses. They're all individual stories. And I think that's intentional. And what Professor Eliach is saying is that the uniqueness of Jewish literature, culture, and memory is to not lose sight of the trees from the forest, to be able to connect the personal, the unique, and the individual to the mass community that encompasses the generations of Jews. We say in the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, when the Jewish people were counted, b'mispar shemos, they were counted as both names and numbers. And it's that combination that makes us unique. The ability to connect individual names with sheer mass numbers. How do we do this? What makes us able to do that? And I think the answer is the next few words in that pasuk of b'mispar shemos. When the Jewish people were counted with names and numbers, they were also counted l'mishpachosehem. They were also counted according to their families, l'beis avosam, to the houses and the tribes that they were part of. The family, the Jewish family, is the link between the individual and the nation. It doesn't have to be a literal biological family, but a micro community is the link between the individual and a nation, both in space and time. A family is just much more than people that are just related to them. It's a social unit that passes along memories, heritage, and values. And it's those timeless things that connect us with the past and the future of our entire nation. These values are unique enough for each one of us to personalize, and yet they're also able to connect us to something much bigger than ourselves. The Roman noblemen discussed in this kina, they sought to compromise the sanctity and the integrity of the Jewish family and the values that it passes down. But it was those very values and the sense of mission and responsibility to their family and their family's place in the Jewish people that ensured that Rabbi Yishmael's children would succeed even in the darkest of dungeons, that they would not fall. That's how, as Jews, we can mourn. We can mourn both the individuals and the community by reflecting on the values and the heritage that those individuals heroically embodied.